Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. We've got a special broadcast today from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. And we're in Pennsylvania because, yes, the Keystone State is key to American politics. It's a microcosm of the country as a whole. Populous, with a mix of urban and rural voters, the electorate here is pretty evenly split between Republicans and Democrats. You'll remember that President Trump won Pennsylvania by less than 45,000 votes out of the 6 million ballots cast here in 2016. So it would make sense to expect that same even split in the state's congressional delegation, half Democrat, half Republican. But that is not the case. The GOP holds 13 out of Pennsylvania's 18 congressional seats, in part because Pennsylvania had one of the most extremely gerrymandered congressional maps in the country. Well, that changed this year. The state Supreme Court struck down the old district map, and suddenly more than a half dozen of Pennsylvania's congressional races are newly competitive. And that could mean major change in the midterm elections. So this hour on Point, Pennsylvania's adventures in redistricting and the impact it could have on American politics. Now, we've been spending several days here in Pennsylvania getting a sense of the districts, old and new. So I want to start today in the state's old 7th district, in a parking lot in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
So this district was known as Goofy Kicking Donald.
A strange name, but that's what the extremely gerrymandered shape of the old 7th district looked like, a Disney brawl. We're standing outside Creed's Seafood and Steaks, squeezed between the Pennsylvania Turnpike and County Line Expressway. And we're here with Kate Doyle, Montgomery County lead for Fair Districts Pennsylvania, a nonpartisan group that's pushing for permanent change in the state's districting rules.
Well, this parking lot is a little infamous when it comes to the previous 7th District of Pennsylvania. It is a connecting point. It is approximately 170 meters long.
Or about 550 feet. The old 7th spread along contorted twists and turns for some 50 miles from the Pennsylvania suburbs to Amish country. But at this pinch point, Usain Bolt could cross the 7th District in about 16 seconds.
Correct.
So it's really just as wide as a parking lot. I mean, why did they do that?
It has to be contiguous.
In other words, no matter how strange the shape, the district has to be a single unit. That has been a long-standing rule in Pennsylvania, says Fair District's Rich Rafferty, who's also with us. Rafferty and Doyle both emphasize that gerrymandering has been a practice beloved by both parties. But the huge difference now? The availability of voter records and vast amounts of consumer information. Rafferty says the combination of big data and sophisticated mapping technology allows district lines to zigzag from house to house, making certain seats so safe, the opposition simply falls away.
57.5% of all elections offered one choice. These are general elections, not primaries.
So why would you allow a legislator to pick their voters? And that's what we talk about. We don't get to pick our legislators.
Oh, look, we just reached the end of the parking lot. We just walked across the 7th district here, the old 7th district.
Now, we keep saying the old 7th because, again, earlier this year, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court struck down the old 2011 congressional map and put a temporary new map in its place. Temporary, and we'll talk more about this later, because the court's ruling didn't alter the rules around how districts can be mapped in the future. Doyle says that means the new, more competitive districts could disappear after the 2020 census.
There's no one, except for a handful of legislators that I've met, that say, hey, that's great, I'm real happy with that process, let's not do a thing, I think it's working.
And Doyle says unless Pennsylvania law is changed, gerrymandering remains a threat to the health of Pennsylvania's democracy.
The dysfunction that we have in our government, both at the state and federal level, occurs because of gerrymandering. No matter what your topic of interest is, if you can't get your bill passed, if legislators are pre-selecting their voters with the intent of knowing how that district is going to go, then I have no voice, and it needs a change.
That's Kate Doyle, Montgomery County Lead for Fair Districts, Pennsylvania. She met with us this weekend at King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. Now, we are talking about Pennsylvania's efforts at redistricting, and we want to hear from you. Do you think gerrymandering is a problem? I mean, if you're in Pennsylvania, of course I wanted to hear about that. But even in your state, Maryland also has an issue with it, too. Does gerrymandering in general distort state houses and Congress? Or is it a normal historic part of American politics, regardless of the party in power? And more broadly, what does fair representation look like to you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining me now in the studio here at WHYY is Lindsay Lazarsky. She's multimedia journalist for WHYY and Keystone Crossroads, a media nonprofit that's focused on Pennsylvania's political challenges. Lindsay, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magna.
It's really great to have you. Your reporting on this redistricting effort in Pennsylvania has been tremendous, so thank you so much for joining us. And also with us in the studio is Terry Madonna, professor of public affairs and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. Professor Madonna, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, let me just ask you both, and Lindsay, I'll start with you. I mean, we heard that little scene from Creed's restaurant in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, where the old 7th District was about – it was just this tiny. I mean, more broadly speaking, how would you describe how gerrymandered Pennsylvania's congressional districts were? We keep hearing that it was one of the worst in the country, but how bad was it?
Well, on first sight, just looking at the 2011 congressional district map, you would see these odd, bizarre shapes. It was kind of like some weird Rorschach test that really, I mean, they didn't follow municipal boundaries and or geographical patterns. It was just this odd, strange strange districts that would cut through neighborhoods, that would cut through communities. And by several measures, Pennsylvania was known as one of the worst gerrymandered states in the country.
Right. I mean, so because we talked about how the – Terry Madonna, we talked about how the electorate here in Pennsylvania is pretty evenly split, but we didn't necessarily see that split in the congressional delegation.
Yeah, well, before the 2011 map was drawn, the Democrats had a 3 or 4 vote edge in the – in the congressional districts, and with the new map, it immediately shifted. There are actually about 800,000 more active Democratic registered voters in the state than Republicans. But with the new map in 2011, in every subsequent election for Congress, the Republicans held a 13-5 edge, and the Democratic 5 seats were largely confined to Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and a seat up in the Northeast. So forget pretty much the rest of the state because of the way the districts were gerrymandering. And it's not only the infamous 7th that I used to describe it as kind of an octopus with the tentacles going out all picking
in crazy
up,
directions, yeah.
As Lindsay points out, cutting through neighborhoods. It gave new meaning to compact and contiguous, which is a requirement by the Supreme Court. And other districts would start up in the Lehigh Valley, up in Wilkes, up in Allentown and Bethlehem, blah, 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 and literally come down to where Franklin and Marshall College is located in South Central PA. One district held by Charlie Dent, we called the Route 83 district or whatever it was. In other words, it went down along a highway.
Right.
To pick up Republican votes.
Well, so what we heard over the weekend, Lindsay, is that part of the problem that people who wanted change saw was that there were natural geographic areas, natural sort of county areas that were being cut up into multiple districts. And so folks were feeling like if they had county level issues, they didn't really have a congressperson to go to, or that congressperson didn't even live in their district. I mean, how often did you hear about that as a concern?
One real example of that would be in Berks County. So Berks County was actually divided among four congressional districts. None of those congressmen actually lived in Berks County. And the city of Reading, a struggling city, which was once named America's poorest city, was actually carved out of its suburban area and tied through a highway or a single road to more rural areas. So you could see that urban core of Berks County was carved out and, you know, placed with an area where it didn't have as much in common.
Yeah. And remember something else that was fascinating. The map was done in 2011. The first case that was taken into the federal courts was not until state and federal courts was not until the summer of 2017. So think about that.
So we had at least two or three election cycles here.
Democratic organizations did not go into court, despite the fact that they were heavily disadvantaged by this. And remember, in Pennsylvania, congressional boundary lines are drawn by the state legislature in the form of a bill,
which
that's exactly right, and goes to the governor for his signature or not. And that's typically the way it's done. I was actually stunned that we'd go through 2012, 14, 16, no court case. Now, the League of Women Voters and another organ, you know, filed suit eventually. Maybe they just wanted to see the results. Maybe they just wanted to see how bad it really was.
So to that point, Terry, I mean, Lindsay, we've got a minute to go here before the break. When we come back, I'm going to play you a voice from leadership in the Pennsylvania Republican Party, because of course they don't see a problem with this, and they really resisted the court case that was brought here in Pennsylvania. But, I mean, just give me a sense of what you think over the course of your reporting is the fundamental problem that people were most concerned about with these very strangely drawn districts. We heard Rich Rafferty before saying that he actually happens to be a Republican. He told me, even though Fair Districts is nonpartisan, he told me he just didn't like the fact that so many people were running unopposed and just felt that that was anti-democratic.
Yeah, I think there was a real problem with the competitiveness of elections. I heard time and time again, just going out and talking to real people, my vote doesn't count. And I think that was the core of it, that people felt like even if they go out and vote, the election was predetermined.
Yeah. That's all changed now.
Well, we'll talk more about that when we come back. But we are talking about Pennsylvania's adventures in redistricting and what effect that might have on politics here in the Keystone State. And also, since we're heading into those midterm elections, what effect that might have on national politics as well. I'm joined by Lindsay Lazarsky. She's a journalist for WHYY. Terry Madonna is also with us. He's a professor at Franklin and Marshall College. And we'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're broadcasting today from the studios of WHYY in Pennsylvania because we're talking about gerrymandering and Pennsylvania's adventures in redistricting and really what effort or what impact that's had on Pennsylvania politics, on representation here in the Keystone State, and what impact it could have as the discussion about gerrymandering and redistricting is taken to the national level. I'm joined here today by Lindsay Lazarsky. She's a multimedia journalist for WHYY and also for Keystone Crossroads, a media nonprofit that's really focused on the state's political challenges. We're also joined by Terry Madonna. He's a professor of public affairs and the director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College as well. Now, Lindsay and Terry, I just want to play a little bit of tape for you because we were talking about at the very beginning of the conversation how Pennsylvania's gerrymandered districts were struck down in January of this year by the state Supreme Court. And this weekend, we actually caught up with Valentino DiGiorgio. He's the chairman of the Republican Party for the state of Pennsylvania. And, you know, he's previously called, and I've seen this in your reporting, Lindsay, he called that January 2018 ruling a hyper-partisan decision by an activist judicial bench. And he followed that up with us this weekend, and here's what he said.
There's nothing in the Pennsylvania Constitution which says the maps have to be fair, whatever fair means. So these judges took it upon themselves to say fairness means, you know, what we think it means. And they drew in the process what was what one analyst called the Democrats' dream map. And so it was just an unconstitutional taking of power by the Supreme Court.
That's Valentino DiGiorgio, the chairman of the Pennsylvania GOP. Now, Lindsay Lazarsky, let me just get some impressions here from you. Because first of all, when DiGiorgio talks about this new map that the state Supreme Court drew, they didn't necessarily want to have to do that. They sent it back to the legislature to draw a new map, but that didn't work out.
Yes. So the timeline here was pretty much a crunch. So on January 22nd, the decision came down that the 2011 map deprived Pennsylvania voters of their right to free and equal elections. And basically, it gave Republicans an unfair advantage and diluted the Democrats' votes. And basically, they gave about a month in between that time to come up with a new map. So they kicked it back to the legislature, said, OK, guys, you know, give us your best shot. That didn't happen. And we saw these contingencies of different groups handing in maps.
And just this Republican-controlled legislature, but Pennsylvania has a Democratic governor now. And they were supposed to agree on a new map but couldn't.
Yes. The governor was supposed to approve the map that the legislature came up with. It didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
Well, first of all, the legislature didn't do it. The legislative leaders did it. It was never passed by the General Assembly in the form of a law, which is what is required. And the Supreme Court, in all fairness to both sides, the Supreme Court did not give the legislature, I think, adequate time to come up with a map, even if the legislature could have come up with a map. And they went back to this clause in the Constitution known as free and equal, which had never been applied in that way before. I'm not suggesting what the court did was wrong. I'm merely suggesting that they went back into the 18th century for the original Constitution to find their interpretation.
So let me ask you both about that because, you know, we've of course had other cases that have worked their way through the federal system to the United States Supreme Court. But the Pennsylvanians who brought this case deliberately chose not to do that because they saw the Pennsylvania state constitution as having stronger voter protections than even the U.S. Constitution. But Terry's indicating here that this was a novel reading of the Constitution.
Well, I think you also have to look at the makeup of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. There are 5 Democrats on the court and 2 Republicans on the court. So we also see this change in the makeup of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. So who are ultimately making the decision?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, they part of it was a political calculation on the part. And going into the federal court, it could have gone on and on and on for a relatively long period of time as it worked its way up to the Supreme Court.
And as the state court challenge was going on, there was a parallel challenge off of, you know, different theory in the federal courts. That ended up going nowhere. And actually the federal judges decided that, no, it's not. They can't say that. It's a gerrymandered map.
Okay. So there's a lot of detail in terms of what's going to happen next in Pennsylvania about these new districts that have been drawn. And many of them swing quite dramatically from Republican to like balanced Republican-Democrat or into the Democratic category, or some of them become profoundly more Republican. I mean, we'll talk about that in a minute. But the point is that a lot more of the districts are competitive now. And that could have a big effect nationally because the Democrats, you know, need to pick up some 20-something seats, and they're looking from anywhere from 4 to 8 of them right here in this one state. Now, but the reason why we wanted to come here is because I actually am also curious about a deeper question, and that is sort of the divide in American politics and whether, you know, gerrymandering is helping to drive that divide. And if we reduce gerrymandering, will we get more moderate voices? So we actually went to the Lehigh Valley this weekend to ask that question. Now, of course, gerrymandering is not the only driver of hyper-polarized politics now, but it does tend to drown out moderate voices. So I just asked voters up there What do they think about Pennsylvania's new districts? And here's what some voters in the Lehigh Valley told us about what they see.
I would leave maybe the paper plates for the church.
There's pumpkin pastry and pulled pork on the table at the Chapman Quarries United Methodist Church. It's in Pennsylvania's brand new 7th district in the Lehigh Valley. On this day, there's a meet and greet going on for Republican candidate Marty Nothstein. A bulletin board hangs on one of the wood-paneled walls, reminding members to keep Jesus at their core. In the middle of the room, a volunteer has set up a life-size cutout of President Trump, giving a thumbs up. Ryan Rogers takes a quick break from the meet and greet. He's a grassroots coordinator for the Nothstein campaign.
It's a life of a campaign staffer, a lot of quick meals.
The Lehigh Valley was previously split into a long, lobster-shaped district that captured heavily Republican areas to the west near Harrisburg. That made it safe for former Republican Congressman Charlie Dent, a moderate who never faced a serious challenge. Dent retired this year, saying basic governing had become far too difficult in Washington. His old district voted for Donald Trump by a margin of 8 points. Rogers says the newly drawn district favored Hillary Clinton by just 1 point, making it one of the most competitive races in this year's midterms.
I like to think of the Lehigh Valley as a microcosm of the United States. Blue dog Democrats to Trump Republican voters, rural areas, suburban areas, urban areas. And it's just going to be a battle, and we know that, and we feel really excited about it.
Rogers calls Nothstein a different kind of conservative, primarily because his candidate won a cycling gold medal at the Sydney Olympics. Nothstein also advocates for strict term limits. But he falls in line with the GOP on key issues: low taxes, anti-abortion, pro-Second Amendment rights, also calling for an end to the Affordable Care Act. Nothstein is also a farmer and a small business owner, and that's what excites Dorothy Niklos. She organized the church meet and greet.
He's not a pie-in-the-sky conservative. There's people who are just ideologues, and he is not an ideologue. He is a working man.
So I asked Niklos a question. Does she think political compromise may be possible in her newly balanced district?
You will always have a divide there because you're having the patriots versus the socialists and the globalists.
Niklos says there's another divide. She thinks Democrats are encouraging a sense of victimization in women. Other women at the table nod in agreement.
Poor Dr. Ford. I think she was victimized, but she came across as poor me. That would not have been our response. Not by any means. We refuse to be victims. We would have been angry.
And yet, Niklos does not approve of the fact that millions of women and men are angry right now, and they're taking action. They're marching in the streets and protesting on Capitol Hill. But to Niklos, that kind of anger isn't becoming. It's not viable, she says. Ryan Rogers, Marty Nothstein's campaign staffer, puts it this way.
I think it ultimately will come down to just a contrast of candidates. Our whole thing has been results versus resistance.
Running in the streets wearing silly pink hats does not make a woman a woman.
The Lehigh Valley is a microcosm of America, of its diversity and its polarity. Because on the very same day, just 15 miles away, at the IBEW Local 375 Union Hall in Allentown, the mood is completely different. Pennsylvania Democrats are rallying for their candidate, civil litigator Susan Wild. Wild won a hard-fought primary against several men, positioning herself as the candidate to lead the district in the direction she believes the Democratic Party wants to go now: left of center, pro-universal health care, pro-reproductive rights, anti-Donald Trump. The state's only black representative, Congressman Dwight Evans, tells the crowd it matters that Wild is a woman.
And I say that to you because we have a chance of doing something we haven't done in Pennsylvania, is electing 4 women in this delegation. And don't take that lightly. Don't take that lightly. And I say that to you because it's reflective of Pennsylvanians.
Yeah, I mean, it is really shocking.
Mariska Van Alst is a volunteer for the Wild campaign.
the fact that we've never had a female governor, we've never had a female senator. So, I mean, it's unfathomable to me. And now it's been several years since we've had any female representation in Washington.
Van Alst lives in Emmaus. She calls it a swing town, in a swing district, in a swing state. And where Republican voter Dorothy Niklos believed Democratic anger was unbecoming of women, Van Alst sees it as the only kind of viable activism right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the fact that Kavanaugh was just confirmed, I mean, it's a really a dangerous time for women. And as I mentioned, I have two girls. I mean, the fact that they won't have bodily autonomy as they go get older is just... We need to elect Democrats to make sure that we can protect those rights.
But what do these women think of Niklos's view that the Democratic Party is encouraging a sense of victimization among women?
No. No, we're not. Women are not feeling like victims. It is time for us to stand up, stop sitting in the background, and go out and fight for the things that we believe in.
Danielle Shackelford is treasurer for the Lehigh County Democratic Party.
We have a lot of older men who have been in their positions for many years, way too long. They have placed into policy conservative views that they have. And the country is so diverse, they don't represent us. They don't represent our values, and therefore they must go. It's time for them to leave.
So, two campaign events, two political parties, the very same day, just 15 miles apart, showing that even in one of Pennsylvania's most politically balanced districts, neighbors in the Lehigh Valley may still be living across an unbridgeable divide.
Those were some voices that we heard just this weekend in Pennsylvania's brand new 7th district. And this is a district that is very, very evenly divided now between Republicans and Democrats. So, Terry Madonna, tell me, I mean, what is the problem that redistricting is supposed to solve if we still have these deep political divides, even amongst neighbors living across the street from each other?
Well, the problem is that we are in hyper-partisan, hyper-polarization, the likes of which we probably have not seen in anyone's lifetime, if not earlier. The fact of the matter is that part of the polarization does come from gerrymandering over the course of time. The Democrats are now becoming and have become the party of urban America with a very different constituency base than the Republicans. The Republican Party is the party of small town and rural America. Mm-hmm. So think – and they battle over the – they fight over the suburbs. So think about the nature of the constituencies – in small town and rural America versus urban America, the demographics of the people, the issues that concern them. Take just cultural issues. Rural and small town America, culturally conservative, right? Mm-hmm. Go to urban America, what do you find? Culturally very liberal. And those differences do get played out. And so urban America sends liberal Democrats. What does small town and rural America send? Right. Conservative Republicans. So you're on to something. But it's deeper than that, but you're on to something.
Yeah. So Lindsay Lazarsky, though, let me ask you. I mean, I think Pennsylvania's new 7th district is so fascinating though, because, you know, everything Terry Madonna said is true. But I'm just wondering, is it a pie-in-the-sky idea to think that if you have a very politically balanced district that by default – candidates would have to run closer to the center or not? I mean, is that what we're seeing?
Possibly. I mean, I think that this election, these midterms, we're kind of on uncharted territory here, and we'll see what happens with the new map and the redistricting. I think that, you know, throwing out the old map is not going to change the divide in America, but right. The elections will be fair. The elections will be – that's the idea, that the elections – that voters will have a fair shot at choosing the candidate that the majority wants to choose. Yeah.
Right. Every vote will have to be earned. Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Look, if we go back to a district special election held earlier in the year that was nationally observed in Pennsylvania in the 18th congressional district.
Connor Lamb.
Mm-hmm. Connor Lamb, a Democrat running in a district won by Donald Trump by 20 points. You know what he said? Oh, I'm not going to vote for Nancy Pelosi for speaker. When candidate and then President Trump, what did he talk about? He talked about iron and coal and steel. We talked about getting rid of NAFTA and getting rid of Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know who put up his hand and agreed with him? A guy named Connor Lamb. So there are districts in which it certainly has affected. But Lindsay's right. In and of itself, I don't think it's going to change the polarization that is deeply rooted in the ideological predilections of these of the candidates.
Mm. So, Lindsay, we kind of skirted around an issue here in terms of where Pennsylvania stands regarding its redistricting efforts right now, and that is the new map is not a permanent one, right?
No. I think that's one of the issues with the court-drawn map and the court order for a new map is that Pennsylvania, during the next round of redistricting after the 2020 census, still has to play by the same rules. That
because the laws around how the districts are drawn haven't changed.
No, and there's been several attempts we heard earlier from Fair Districts PA, from other groups to get a legislative change, but that's a tall order.
Well, yeah, because I asked them about this. They're asking the very legislators who are, you know,
you got it.
to change the map that helps keep them in office.
Vote against their interests twice.
Right. Republicans controlled the state legislature in 2011, and they're likely to control the legislature in 2021.
I think that makes our governor's race very important.
Veto, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, Val DiGiorgio from the state GOP said they're winning because they're offering the vision and the plans and the measures that they think are more convincing and beneficial to Pennsylvania voters. They say all the Democrats have to do is do that and they'll win elections and redistricting be darned.
His point is that they need to come up with better candidates, better ideas, and we'll see what happens in the midterm elections.
Well, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us, and I'll get to them after the break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're broadcasting today from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia, and we're here in Pennsylvania because we wanted to take a close look at the state's adventures in redistricting and gerrymandering and what effect that's having on Pennsylvania politics and national politics as well. I'm joined today by Lindsay Lazarsky. She's a multimedia journalist for HYY who's been covering this issue for quite a long time. And by Terry Madonna. He's professor of public affairs and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. And our callers have been so patient here, so let me do them some justice and get them on the line here. Jason is calling from Fawn Grove, Pennsylvania. Jason, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm from the 11th District in Pennsylvania. Jess King is running, and I also did some volunteer work for George Scott in the 10th District, and I was happy to see that these two districts are now competitive, especially the 10th District, but I'd really like to see Pennsylvania move further in this direction and make it more fair, and I really wonder why shouldn't this be more of a mathematical procedure rather than a political procedure, you know, starting at the top left of the state and sort of mathematically work your way through the population and the counties and geographic boundaries. And
Right. It's a good question, Jason. And I mean, Lindsay Lazarsky, you've been following this issue for a long time. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you've got a great point there. And under the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling, you know, they kind of borrowed from the state legislative district rules that, you know, congressional districts need to be compact. They need to be contiguous. They need to split as few counties, municipalities as possible, and that partisan consideration cannot supersede those neutral criteria. So I think that, you know, going forward, the ruling does say that there are these neutral criteria that need to be considered before partisan concern. But, you know, the court didn't go so far and say that here's where you can, you know, draw the line as far as when drawing districts becomes too partisan. So it's vague, but there are some guidelines that the legislature can use going forward.
But Terry Madonna, to the point that the caller was making about, you know, are there algorithmic ways to get fairness out of district maps, or are politics always going to be a part of this process?
Oh, I don't think you can remove politics. Democrats and Republicans will both try to advantage themselves, and actually, because of the algorithms and these models that they now have, they can be more skillful at it. They actually can be better at gerrymandering because of the nature of – they can literally get down to the precinct level. You hear what I just said? Not the district or the ward level, the precinct level, and divide up the electorate in a way that benefits one party or the other.
Someone still has to set the rules for the algorithm. I always think when we say computers can do it better. Let's take another call here. Jim is calling from Akron, Ohio. Jim, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I live in northern Summit County. That's the Akron, Ohio area. And we, of course, have a Republican governor and a Republican Congress. And they, about 3 years ago, they came over and took northern Summit County, which was a Democratic area. And we now have a Republican Congressman, Renacci. And it was all gerrymandered. That's how they got us. And we lost our Democratic congressman.
Mm. Yeah. May I make
Jim, thanks. Go ahead, Terry Madonna.
I want to make a point about this. Elections have consequences. And what happened in 2010 in the Tea Party election was not just that the Republicans picked up 63 House seats, or put it another way, the Democrats lost 63 House seats, but that they took over state legislatures. I think the number now, and I may be off, is 36 state legislatures in which the Republicans control the state legislatures, both houses. And you can see what that means in states. Now, not every state has it done by law, but when you get all these Republican governors and Republican state lawmakers in state after state after state, that has a huge difference on writing the laws of each state, you know, that govern redistricting.
Yeah.
Exactly, and the actual process itself. So the 2010 election was huge, not just in terms of the bringing the Tea Party to power, the ideological conservatism that it represents.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Yeah, just to piggyback on that, just one thing that I think we saw with Pennsylvania's, you know, one of the most egregious gerrymandered maps in the country, we see one party control, right? We see that the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, the governor's office, and, you know, they made the laws, they made the rules, and there was no really check.
And by the way, Democrats would do – let's be nonpartisan. I know you're not being partisan, but the Democrats have done that. As already pointed out, there's a district in Maryland. So this is not partisan. Both parties will do this.
Well, that's exactly the point I wanted to go to, because regardless of party, if the party has the power, it seems very natural in terms of American politics to try to consolidate that power. But you know, when Republicans do it, as they have done here in Pennsylvania, Democrats have done it elsewhere. People keep talking to me about Maryland, California back in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. But the point is that is there a way to come up with a fair system that does mostly remove politics from the equation. Here, let me do something. Let me play for you a little bit of tape here. This is, again, Valentino DiGiorgio. He's the GOP chairman of Pennsylvania. And he basically just takes issue with that entire question because he says it's perfectly fine with legislators creating districts. And he really opposes the idea of any other system, specifically an independent citizens commission, which we'll talk about here in a second. He opposes other systems to draw future congressional maps. And here's what he said.
So legislators are in the best position to draw lines. And look, at the end of the day, heaven forbid politics should enter into a piece of legislation that draws party, you know, political maps. It's done all over the country. Democrats have drawn maps to their favors in other states. Look at Maryland. So, you know, this is nonsense. This was part of a Barack Obama, Eric Holder, fair districting plan, they called it, to take back congressional seats. And they've done it here in Pennsylvania.
That's Val DiGiorgio, Pennsylvania GOP chair. So Lindsay Lazarsky, he basically says, we know the state the best. We should draw the maps. But there is this other idea about an independent citizens commission. What would that look like in Pennsylvania?
I just have to say I love that operatic music behind Val.
It was at a Columbus Day festival in Philadelphia.
It's taking me there to South Philly. So, a group in Pennsylvania, Fair Districts PA, for a number of years now, they've been trying to change the Pennsylvania Constitution and to implement an independent citizens commission that would actually draw the lines. And they've modeled this after California. And this is really a grassroots organization. You see them at street fairs. You see them at events canvassing. And, you know, they're asking the legislators to basically vote against their interests to form this commission.
But as you pointed out, there is such a commission in California made up of appointed independent citizens. And I think a couple other states in the West have similar commissions. So do they work, though? Have they created fairer districts?
If you talk to the people on the commission, yes. If you talk to voters, yes. I think a key difference between Pennsylvania and California is that in Pennsylvania, there's no referendum. So basically, to get that process in place, the state legislature would have to pass a constitutional amendment, and then it would go to the voters in a referendum.
And there's no guarantee that an independent commission itself would be truly independent.
I mean, they have to be appointed by somebody.
Yeah. That's or hold positions by virtue, get on the commission by virtue of a position they already hold, or you could have state lawmaker leaders appoint a few. You could have different groups. Yeah, it can get complicated. But here's what's fascinating: until Baker versus Carr, a Supreme Court decision, and then another one, Reynolds versus Sims, political gerrymandering itself was not considered a constitutional question. It was considered illegal. It was considered a political question. You got it? Political. Gerrymandering is political. In and of itself, that's not illegal. And that all and for the most part, what the Supreme Court has done over the years, it's changed now, was just to look if the population equality was consistent. And I mean, they got down to a decimal of a percent. You know, if you drew the boundary lines and you were over the population or under the population, you got yourself in legal trouble.
Well, you know what? I want to get a couple more calls before we run out of too much time here. Dane is calling from Greenville, North Carolina. Dane, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm not from Pennsylvania, obviously, but if you want to look up gerrymandering, North Carolina specifically, where I am in Greenville, would be a perfect example how our General Assembly lines, which includes the state House and Senate, along with our federal lines, are all cut along the same, you know, areas, but also go along compared to the people, the town and gown with East Carolina University, and how wrong and how it seems evil how they're districted just in our small town that has less than 100,000 people.
Wow. Well, Dane, thank you for your call. Let's go to Nate, who's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Nate, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. Wisconsin actually has had its own court case, and in the lower federal courts, they did rule that the gerrymandering, which I call rigging of elections because it really is rigging of elections, undermines citizens' rights by making their votes meaningless. And I've seen it go all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court did not rule the lower court was wrong. It basically said the people who were complaining didn't show that they lived in gerrymandering districts and kicked it back. So right. We actually do have a successful federal court case. I know they've been struggling for a long time to restore democracy, basically, in places like Texas and Florida. But right. This really is the rigging of elections.
Nate, thank you so much for your call. Lindsay Lazarsky, I think an issue that Nate brought up that was avoided here in Pennsylvania is that with the court case, the state Supreme Court case that was brought here, there was a plaintiff from every one of the 18 congressional districts, so proving that, yeah. that there was impact or standing across the state.
Yes, and they had to prove that they were harmed.
Harmed, right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question. We have a temporary fix, and I put fix in quotes because, again, as we've been hearing throughout the hour, there are folks who, particularly in the state GOP, who don't have a problem with the current system. But where do we go from here? I mean, if after 2020 and the next census, yeah. it could all revert back, is this just sort of a flash in the pan for election, well, fair elections in, or I should say fair districts in the yeah. state of Pennsylvania?
I think that during this midterm election, we're seeing, you know, a dramatic overhaul of Pennsylvania's districts. But like you say, that might not last. And I think that that's one of the issues when you do a court challenge is that this is going to be temporary. And there's really no transparency, which to some people is a problem, that we don't know why the Pennsylvania Supreme Court made the decisions that they did. Their expert is under gag order. There's really no transparency with the district. So I think that, you know, the Pennsylvania League of Women Voters and the Public Interest Law Center and these 18 voters who challenged the map, you know, they will have what they think is more of a fair election yeah. this time around. But in the future, we still have the same rules.
Yeah, the bottom line is simple. If the composition of the legislature doesn't change, I'll put it another way. If the Republicans continue to control the legislature in 2021, they're likely to draw a map that reverses much of what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did in the current map. Now, as Lindsay pointed out earlier, it really then might matter whether we have a Democratic or a Republican governor at the time. A governor could veto the map, send it back to the legislature to have it redrawn. But it looks like there's going to be no legislative change in how the districts are redrawn yeah. by going to an independent commission.
I'm really running out of time, Red, but there's one more question I want to ask you in particular, Terry. So we do have these new congressional maps for this race. Are you seeing, just even if it's just for this year, sort of politics being changed in terms of who's running and the kinds of races we're seeing in Pennsylvania's districts?
Well, first of all, we have a record number of women running, 23 women, 94 people actually filed for the 18 congressional districts. 23 of them women ran. 8 survived the primaries. 7 of them Democrats. We're likely to have, it looks like conceivably, I'll put it that way, 4 women could go into a delegation that doesn't have a single woman. We haven't had one since 2014 when Congresswoman Allison Schwartz ran for governor. The bottom line here is that we're going to see a big change in the Pennsylvania delegation. The Democrats could pick up between 5 and 8 seats. Pennsylvania will be one of the 3 or 4 states that determine whether the Democrats get 23 seats yeah. and take control of the federal House.
So that might happen this year, but we still have that persistent question about whether, you know, fair districts can be a permanent part of Pennsylvania politics. So we're going to come back to this probably maybe next year. Lindsay Lazarsky, multimedia journalist for WHYY and Keystone Crossroads, a media nonprofit focused on the state's political challenges. It's been so great to have you, and your reporting has been so thorough on this. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Terry Madonna, professor of public affairs and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College, thank you as well.
My pleasure.
And by the way, I want folks to know that this weekend we went to the Lehigh Valley, we've been here in Philadelphia, and we've got reporting on what we saw and the voters we talked to. It's all at onpointradio.org. And on our Facebook page, we've got photos of voters and candidates and organizers in the Lehigh Valley. That's at On Point Radio on Facebook. Check it out. And I want to give a special thanks to the staff at WHYY for hosting us today, including Adam Staniszewski, Joyce Lieberman, Naomi Starobin, Shanga Tab, Julian Hirschfeld, Lindsay Lazarski, and Dick Pullman today. You guys have been tremendous hosts. Thank you so much, WHYY. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Allison Poley, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, Tanya Rowley, Kyrie Thompson, and Miriam Wasser. Karen Schiffman is our executive producer. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken? Wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.